The following is a two-chapter sample of Final Audition, a Marshall James thriller, written by Mark McNeese, narrated by Wondervox AI. Chapter 1. Now, New York City. I wouldn't call it a fight, or even a falling out. A realignment, perhaps, a reassessment of sorts. We were not witnessing the end of us that night by any means, but it was as close to a serious fracture as we had experienced in our 13 years together. I'd always known he had a jealous streak, but it was far outweighed by his kindness and his patience. And let's face it, I had not given him a reason to be jealous in all that time. Despite my previous reputation as a hard drinker and a chain smoker before it caught up to me and cost me a lung, my days of easy sex and sweat falling off me to the floor were far behind me. I'd looked at other men since I'd met and gotten involved with Boo, but I hadn't touched one, not even a passing brush of the hand. But this was different. This was me admitting that I wanted to find a man I'd once loved with ferocity, a man who'd saved my life on more than one occasion, and who had surely considered ending it a time or two. "Mac McElroy," he said, when I told him which long-lost friend I wanted to find in a search through the mists of time. "The Mac McElroy?" We'd been watching TV on the couch, his legs draped over my lap while I rubbed his feet. It was something of a routine for us. We would settle in for the night, sometimes with popcorn or snacks, just as often with nothing but our cat, Critter, tucked beside us. Boo, whose birth name was Buford McGibbon, which explained his preference for a nickname, was wearing just pajama bottoms, and I was in sweats and a t-shirt. He still looked amazing in his early 50s, 10 years younger and a whole lot smarter than me. Between being together as long as we have been, and the side effects of age and debilitating chemotherapy, acting on my attraction to him wasn't something I often did. I'd rather ignore the issue than be embarrassed by borderline impotence, but I thought about it every time I looked at him with his shirt off. Tonight I had other things on my mind, however, and I decided it was a good time to tell him my plan. "There isn't another Mac McElroy," I replied, more abruptly than I'd meant to. After all, he'd known about Mac and his place in my life since our earliest days as a couple. I didn't talk too much about the man, but he'd been part of my past, a very big part, and it was inevitable that I would talk about him if I discussed my history at all. Boo sat up, grabbed the remote off the coffee table, and muted the show we'd been watching. He was clearly upset by my bringing up Mac in the context of finding him. "Why, Marshall? You haven't spoken to him in years, decades from what you've told me. You don't even know if he's still alive." Staring at him, holding in check any anger I might have had at his reaction, I said, "Maybe that's the point, Boo. Time is not on my side. Don't say that." I said it because it was true. I'd survived a cancer scare, more appropriately called a cancer terror. It had taken a large chunk of my left lung and given me an inescapable sense of living on borrowed time, although I tended to view it as stolen from others more deserving. Why should I get a reprieve when some kid who's never harmed anyone dies in his parents' arms with a brain tumor? I'd rather give my time to him, or her, or them. I don't believe in heaven or hell, and I don't really care where I go when I die, since I don't think we go anywhere but the nearest crematorium. We're simply lights that turn on for a while, and one day we turn off. Now you see us, now you don't. That's just the way life is, and I was cancer-free 5 years later. But how long would it stay that way? It was this sense I had of time truly slipping away that had made me wanting to find Mac after all these years. Not because I still loved him, though love is a thing that never truly dies. Not because I wanted to leave Boo for him, even if such a ridiculous fantasy could come true. And not because I wanted to say I was sorry, despite having spent over 35 years feeling very much that way. I was sorry it ended in the manner it did. I was sorry I'd been too young to know better. I was sorry neither of us had reached across that divide to touch hands one more time and offer forgiveness, as well as to ask for it. And maybe, no, certainly, telling these stories of our lives in the 1980s, when Los Angeles was an epicenter of so much destruction, so much loss, had brought this man front and center in my mind. Was he alive? Was he in any way the man I remembered? Was he happy? "I'm not happy about it," Boo said, as if he'd seen the word flash through my thoughts. He got up from the couch, sending Critter jumping to the floor. The old cat had been resting between Boo's legs and the back cushion. "I don't expect you to be," I said. but I'm not asking for a divorce. I'm not saying what we have isn't enough. It is. I just want to know if he's alive. It's more than that, Marshall. Ever since you decided to take long strolls down memory lane, a very dark street from what you've told me, you've been maudlin. Maudlin, I said, startled. That's not what I intended. I know it's not. And I know you're obsessed with dying. I'm not obsessed with dying. But we all do, Boo. It's not something anyone escapes. And when it's come as close to you as it has to me, when it's breathed down your neck and made you wake up covered in sweat. I know perfectly well what that's like, he replied. I've been with you for 13 years. I remember the chemo and the fear, all of it. But you're in remission. It would be nice if you lived like it, if you considered the time you've been given a reason to be content, if you can't be happy. I'm both, I said, knowing it was not convincing. I want to say goodbye to him if I can, one more time. What if he's not interested in hearing it? I knew he was telling the truth, saying something I didn't want to admit to myself. Even if I could find Mac, he may prefer to stay lost. I know there's no stopping you, he said, signaling that he'd talked enough and was going to bed. You're as stubborn as a doorstop, and I know better than to stand in your way. You've already decided to do this, and you will never stop thinking you're going to be dead tomorrow. It's the way you are. So goddamned honest and so kind. A sort of sad kindness that could be mistaken for pity by someone who didn't know Boo the way I did. I'm just curious, I said. Oh, bullshit. Curiosity can be satisfied by finding someone on Facebook. I didn't tell him I'd already tried. Mac was not there. This is more than that. You want to hear his voice. True. You want to see what he looks like now. Also true. You want to hold him if that's possible. Ah, shit. And you know what, Marshall James? There he went with the full name business, something he did when he was about to speak to me as a wise one speaks to a child. It's okay. I know you love me. You married me, and that was saying a lot. It was a fact. I'd never been the marrying kind until Boo made it seem inevitable. So look for the love of your life. I started to protest, and he held his hand up to stop me. It's not wrong to say that. We all have one of those. But now I'll never tell you if you're mine. He gave me that mischievous smile that always made me melt. He was not going to storm out, the way I'd stormed out on Mac one too many times. He was not going to sulk or go silent for the rest of the night. Just stay honest with me, he finished. Tell me what you find, who you find, and be prepared to be hurt by it, Marshall. That's just the truth. He was right. When we go digging around in the past, assuming it's the same as the present, we can regret it. But I was willing to take that risk. I didn't want to go to my grave, or in my case, an urn, without having tried to say goodbye to the one man I'd never said it to. I'm not sure where to start, I said. His smile gone, he replied, That's not my problem. Now I'm going to bed. Critter is going with me. We'll see you when you get there. And with that, he left the room. Chapter 2. The next morning I started looking for Mac McElroy where every search begins now, on the internet. Boo and I shared a computer we'd set up in the living room. He'd left an hour earlier for his job at Palindrome Books in the East Village. It was one of a handful of independent bookstores that had survived the invasion by large retailers, followed by the cataclysm of online booksellers. He'd been there for almost 20 years, and he was now considered as much a part of the store as its original shelves. Boo loves books. If he had his way, we would live in an apartment surrounded by them, with a kaleidoscope of colorful book spines everywhere we looked. I'd convinced him to cull his impressive collection and limit it, at least in our home, to two large bookcases in the living room and one more in the bedroom. Since moving in together, he'd kept a commitment to give away a book each time he brought a new one in. Our nights had always consisted of watching some television in the evening, then reading in bed, whether it was in one of our separate studio apartments or, now that we lived together, the one bedroom I'd gotten at a good rent simply by virtue of being a reliable tenant. The landlord is more accustomed to his renters dying from drug overdoses or being carted off to jail. I was an exception, and he'd let us have our apartment for a monthly payment we could afford on our combined income. I'd thought about Mac on and off for the last 30 plus years, mostly off since I'd met Boo. But for the first few years after we split up, it had been intense and obsessive. It had required all my resolve not to beg him to take me back. The last time we'd spoken in person, which was the last time we'd said anything to each other, he had told me I was bad news, and he'd grown too weary of it to allow it in his life anymore. He had not softened the blow by telling me he loved me, and for many years I couldn't decide which hurt more, that he'd let me know I was the kind of trouble no man deserved, or that he hadn't let me down a little bit easier with some reassurance that the love we'd had was still alive, buried alive, but there somewhere inside him. I had honored his request and never called, never wrote, never stalked. Well, mostly never. Mac McElroy didn't want me around, and I understood why he felt that way. I'd brought death into his life. I'd almost cost him his career with the LAPD, and I'd broken his heart. Of all the things I had inflicted on the man, it was the heartache I regretted most. To be honest, he didn't have to tell me he loved me when we had that last encounter. It was in his beautiful, sad, blue eyes. He just wasn't willing to hurt himself even worse by saying it. I typed in Kevin McElroy, his legal name, and the results were exhaustive. Apparently, it was not uncommon, and I spent 20 minutes sifting through items, social media posts, and Twitter shares. Most of the men I found were much too young to be Mac, and a few were too old. Two were deceased, and my heart stopped a moment both times I saw an obituary with his name on it. Fortunately, Mac was not one of them. I then tried Mac McElroy, the name everyone knew him by. He'd told me his immediate family had started calling him Mac when he was a child, just as they'd called his father that. But this brought significantly fewer results, none of them helpful. A half hour after I'd sat down at the computer, I felt stumped. A man who had been central to my existence for 3 years in my 20s had vanished. It's not that unusual for people to have no online presence, but Mac had been a detective with the Los Angeles Police Department. As detectives go, it was a high-profile position. I was about to give up and think of another way to proceed when I saw something, maybe 30 results into the search, an item from a now-defunct gay newspaper in Hollywood. LA Pride had been a fixture on the gay scene in Los Angeles when I moved there. A local throwaway, it had lasted longer than it should have. It had been central to me tracking down a killer in 1984, but I'd assumed it had gone under like most of its kind once the internet came into being. I was off by several years, but I knew the paper was out of business, and its website was clearly dormant. It was a stroke of luck they hadn't taken it down altogether. Someone forgot to turn the lights out when they left the building. I pulled up the item and saw it was dated October 28, 1998. Hollywood, California. Longtime out detective Mac McElroy retires from LAPD. Among the first officers in the Los Angeles Police Department to come out of the closet when he was just a beat cop patrolling the streets of Hollywood, Detective Kevin Mac McElroy recently retired after 25 years with the LAPD. It wasn't easy being openly gay in the late 70s, McElroy said over the phone when LA Pride had a chance to talk with him. I was already a cop for several years when I knew I had to do this. I couldn't do my job effectively and live a double life. A lie, essentially. So I told my partner at the time, and then I told my bosses, and I never looked back. Being gay was still illegal in many parts of the country when McElroy came out, and change did not come easily. Cops are conservative by nature, he said. There was name-calling, mostly behind my back, and a few confrontations in the early days of it. But eventually everyone saw me as a good cop, first and last. They didn't care who I slept with as long as I caught the bad guys. McElroy went on to become a homicide detective in the Hollywood division, and after 2.5 decades serving the people of Los Angeles, he's looking forward to staying active in his retirement in a new town with his partner. Charlie's a good match for me, McElroy said, referring to the man he's been with for several years, but who he declined to identify further. We're heading to Las Vegas in a few weeks. He's got a new job there dealing at the Trop, and I'll be along for the ride. Who knows? Maybe I'll become a professional gambler. Just kidding, but anything's possible. He went on to say that Los Angeles had been good to him, but it was time for a new chapter. He opened doors, he crashed through barriers, and now he wants to live quietly in the desert. We wish him well. It was a lot to take in. Mac was 11 years older than me, so he was 51 when he retired. That would make him 73 now. Thinking about it made me feel aged, and the matter more urgent than I'd considered it. If I was going to find him, now would be that time. And who was Charlie? And what became of their lives in Las Vegas? I had to step back and consider what I'd read. The information the article provided had been both limited and helpful. I had his name and a location. There might be more places to look. In fact, I was certain there were. But my head was spinning and I needed to unspin it for a few hours before I thought through any kind of plan. Meanwhile, I decided to do one last search online. I typed in Morning Light Theater Group Los Angeles 1985. I expected few results, considering it was a theater that had gone under shortly after I walked through its doors. To my surprise, there were at least a half dozen articles about the theater and what happened there. Surprise mixed with dismay when I began scanning the articles and discovered that each of them mentioned me. One item was on a website devoted to what it called Hollywood's Dark History, a tour down memory lane for the morbidly curious. Rather than feeling flattered by these claims to fame, I was embarrassed. I felt myself flush, and I looked around to make sure no one could see me, even though Critter was the only other living soul in the apartment. A few of them also mentioned the young man I would always associate with that theater, an aspiring actor with a starring role in the docudrama of my life. Had it not been for him, I may never have left Los Angeles. I may never have pushed Mac too far, and I may not have found myself as an old man wondering if he was still alive. The alternate reality implicit in that, that I would also never have come to New York or met my husband Boo, was an unavoidable conclusion. It did not mean I loved Boo any less, or that I wished it had all turned out differently. It had not. But maybe I could finish something I'd left undone a long time ago. Circles are not always circular. More often they wend and wind and bring us back, at last, to familiar ground. We were old now, Mac and I, but I could not say we were familiar. Not anymore. It's time for one more trip down the memory hole, into darkness and fear and murder. Mac will still be there, and that beautiful young actor whose name would never slip my mind, and that theater I hoped had burned to the ground long ago. Some things house evil so monstrous they cannot be left standing. By starting my search for Mac, I had also begun a final trip into the past. The courage required was outmatched only by my determination to go there.